Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, December 16th, 2005. I'm Jim Thompson. Coming up on the news, the EPA orders Portland to spend millions of dollars fighting a parasite in drinking water. The New York City Transit Union calls a selective strike today. And look out, Walmart unveils its global expansion plan. Today's Portland area weather, cold and partly sunny in the morning, then mostly sunny, high 35 to 40. Tonight, mostly clear in the evening, then partly cloudy, patchy, freezy fog, lows 25 to 30.
After years of lobbying, negotiating, and not-so-subtle threatening, Portland leaders were told by the Environmental Protection Agency that the city must spend tens and possibly hundreds of millions of dollars fighting a tiny parasite known as Cryptosporidium. But instead of spending the money on cleaning up the problem, the city will sue. EPA regulators in Washington, D.C. are expected to unveil a new administrative rule that requires cities with unfiltered and open water supplies to take two steps to fight the waterborne pathogen. Portland must filter or disinfect drinking water at its original source. In Portland's case, the Bull Run Reservoir, located east of Portland near Mount Hood. The new rule does not include the waivers that Portland was seeking. Without any kind of waiver, the city will sue the federal government rather than comply. The city has 45 days to file a notice of appeal. This from the Oregonian.
A healthcare summit held in Salem this week provided only ambiguous results. Oregon health policy leaders hoped that the out-of-towners would come up with the big ideas. Instead, they found healthcare professionals from around the nation looking to Oregon for solutions. For example, one representative said Idaho wants to move toward home and community-based care for older people as cheaper alternatives to nursing homes. Oregon took that step more than 25 years ago. More than 600,000 Oregonians lack health care insurance coverage. That number is on the rise after nearly a decade of decline. Costs are soaring for private and public insurance, and the Oregon Health Plan is reverting to a traditional state Medicaid program instead of casting a wider net to cover most low-income people. The most talked-about change would empower the state to set risk-adjusted premiums, which recipients in selected counties would use to shop for coverage. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
An Animal Liberation Front activist from Canada was indicted this week in Portland by a federal grand jury for allegedly carrying a phony green card. Darren Thurston was arrested last week in northwest Portland with an Oregon woman suspected of taking part in a series of arson and vandalism events in the Pacific Northwest dating to 1998. Thurston's entree into the case throws an international twist into the United States' most extensive eco-sabotage bust. Thurston and Chelsea Gerlach were arrested as they stepped out of a 1995 Toyota at Northwest 18th Avenue in Flanders. The government has remained silent so far about how Thurston and Gerlach came to know each other and whether Thurston figures in the sabotage in Oregon and Washington. The charges against Thurston accuse him of possessing a phony green card, an identification document that allows foreigners to stay or remain employed in the United States. That card, as well as a phony Social Security card, bore the name Kevin Gregory Busk, according to the indictment. Although Gerlach is a relatively unknown in the radical environmental underground, Thurston is alleged to be a key figure in the eco-underground. The 35-year-old activist was convicted of setting fire to fish trucks in 1991 in Edmonton, Alberta. Thurston is being held in a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention facility in Tacoma. Gerlach was among seven men and women charged last week in five arsons and the toppling of a high-voltage tower near Bend. The Earth Liberation Front and Animal Liberation Front claimed responsibility for the fires, but no one stepped forward in the tower vandalism. This from the Oregonian.
Congress is expected to act quickly on two stalled defense bills, including a $453 billion must-pass wartime spending measure. Now that President Bush has agreed to a proposal to ban cruel and inhuman and degrading treatment of terrorist detainees in U.S. custody. In a reversal, the president bowed to pressure from the GOP-controlled Congress and accepted the proposal put forth by Senator John McCain on handling foreign terrorism suspects and limiting interrogation tactics used by American troops. Bush's endorsement Thursday came after months of opposition that included White House veto threats of any bill that contained the Cain provisions. The proposal by McCain, a former Navy pilot who spent 5.5 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, has held up completion of two defense bills. Senate versions of the measure included the language, but the House bills did not. Congress is likely to finish both defense bills as soon as this weekend. Lawmakers are expected to sign off on the McCain proposals in at least one of the two bills, most likely in the spending measure that also provides $50 billion for the Iraq War, before adjourning in a few days.
Several Patriot Act provisions that the Bush administration says are crucial in the fight to stop terrorism on United States soil may only be around for another couple of weeks. A coalition of Senate Democrats and libertarian-leaning Republicans is threatening to filibuster a congressional agreement to renew 16 key portions of the USA Patriot Act before they expire on December 31st. A showdown vote was scheduled for today, with the White House and its congressional allies rejecting suggestions for a short-term extension of the current law as is. White House allies said they would prefer to let the 16 temporary provisions expire completely, rather than give critics more time to add additional restrictions on the FBI's ability to comb through America's computer files, bank, and library records. Making most of the Act's provisions permanent is a priority for both the Bush administration and Republican leaders on Capitol Hill before Congress adjourns for the year. So, call your senators today. Voice your opinions about the Patriot Act. Senator Gordon Smith can be reached at 202-224-3753 and Senator Ron Wyden at 202-224-5244. Participate in your democracy.
Democratic leaders sternly criticized President Bush yesterday for saying former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay is innocent of felonious campaign finance abuses, according to the Washington Post. They are suggesting Bush's comments virtually amounted to jury tampering before DeLay stands trial. During an interview Wednesday on the Fox News Channel, Bush was asked whether he believed DeLay was innocent of the charges of money laundering and conspiracy that led to his indictment and resignation from the House Republican leadership in September. The president said, "Yes, I do." That response pushed the White House on the defensive. Administration officials have consistently deflected questions about other legal probes, saying they could not comment on ongoing investigations. White House spokesman Scott McClellan called the apparent inconsistency a presidential prerogative.
The New York Times held on to the story about warrantless domestic spying for a full year at the request of the Bush administration. This from our story. The Times also reveals that senior members of Congress from both parties knew about Bush's decision to spy on Americans without warrants. Further, the Times notes that they have omitted information in the article that they did write, agreeing with the Bush administration that the information could be useful to terrorists. The White House asked the New York Times not to publish articles, arguing that it could jeopardize continuing investigations and could alert would-be terrorists that they might be under scrutiny. After meeting with senior administration officials, the newspaper delayed publication for a year to conduct additional reporting, while many details about the program remained secret. Officials familiar with it said the NSA eavesdropped without warrants on up to 500 people in the United States at any given time. The list changes as some names are added and others dropped, so the number monitored in this country may have reached into the thousands over the past 3 years. Overseas, about 5,000 to 7,000 people suspected of terrorist ties are monitored at any one time.
New York City's transit union called a selective strike against private bus lines today after a night of bargaining failed to produce a deal involving 33,000 subway and bus workers. The strike could eventually extend to the subway system, the union said, but when that could happen was unclear. Roger Toussaint, president of Transport Workers Union Local 100, said, quote, "We tried to bargain. We negotiated well past our contract deadline because we wanted to get a deal done, and we still do." The union had threatened a full strike at 12:01 a.m. when the contract expired. A strike would paralyze the nation's largest transit system at the height of the holiday season. Nearly 7 million people use the transit system each day. Commuters were relieved to find the subways still running. They had been warned to carpool, walk, or bike to work in the event of a strike. Some companies arranged van or ferry service for employees, suggested working from home.
Former business partner, Gloria
Virus database has been updated.
In Miami yesterday to fraud and conspiracy charges. This, according to the Washington Post. Adam Kitten has agreed to cooperate in a congressional influence peddling investigation. Kitten's agreement to provide evidence against Abramoff makes him the second partner of the disgraced lobbyist to agree to cooperate in the investigation. Abramoff has been indicted for illegal actions he allegedly took to purchase a fleet of Florida gaming boats from a businessman who was later killed in a gangland-style hit. Other efforts he took to funnel money to support the interests of his mainly Republican clients are also being probed. Kitten is prepared to testify against Abramoff and Republican Representative Bob Ney of Ohio. He pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court to conspiracy and fraud. He faces 10 years in prison. Abramoff is also being investigated in Washington on suspicion of bribing government officials and lawmakers and defrauding tribal clients. Another former Abramoff associate, Michael Scanlon, has agreed to cooperate in the Sun Cruise case as part of a plea agreement in the Washington matter.
A blast of freezing rain across Georgia and the Carolinas closed schools, snarled traffic, and caused power outages to more than 450,000 customers. At least one death was blamed on the storm when an ice-laden tree crashed through a man's house. Lucinda True, spokesman for Duke Power, said, "Ice is our greatest nemesis, much worse than snow." Duke Power is the main provider of electricity in the hardest-hit parts of the Carolinas. The widespread outages Thursday were caused by the ice that formed on tree limbs and fell onto power lines. In Kannapolis, North Carolina, just north of Charlotte, authorities said the weight of that ice buckled a 100-foot-tall tree that crushed 58-year-old Ralph Jones while reclining on a couch in his living room. While electricity was quickly restored to some, outages by early evening still totaled 260,000 in South Carolina's upstate, about 170,000 in North Carolina, 55,000 in Northeast Georgia, and 34,000 in the Atlantic area.
This week, supporters of conservation celebrated a victory when proposed changes to mining laws were dropped from the federal budget reconciliation package. The changes would have allowed for widespread privatization of public lands. Here to tell us more about the significance of this action is Rolf Skar of Siskiyou Project, an organization working to protect the Siskiyou Wild Rivers area. Welcome, Rolf. Are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Tell us, what is the significance of the dropping of these proposed changes to mining law?
Well, quite frankly, it's almost hard to describe how big a victory this is, and a lot of folks never heard about it because there's many other anti-conservation battles that we're fighting right now, including fighting over drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and the rollback of the Endangered Species Act. This would have allowed for the privatization of public lands, the abuse and the privatization of public lands across hundreds of millions of acres.
So why actually were the changes dropped?
Well, because they were so extreme and so out of step with the American public. They were proposed by Richard Pombo and Representative Gibbons. And Pombo is the lead sponsor of the bill that would destroy the Endangered Species Act. He even has proposed in the last year to privatize, to sell off some of our national parks as a way to raise money for the federal treasury. In other words, he's ideologically opposed to the very notion of public lands, and he's doing everything that he can as the guy who heads up the Committee on Natural Resources in the House of Representatives to get rid of public lands, to get rid of protections for public lands. And this is something that he's had his sights on for a long time. What he did was he snuck in language that would have changed the 1872 mining law and change it in ways that actually makes it worse, which is hard to believe since it was a law that was passed before the light bulb was invented, before women had the right to vote. And it was essentially a bill that was designed to, quote, sell off and settle the West at a time of westward expansion and at a time when Native peoples are being kicked off their land. So, that's what this bill really was about.
So, Rolf, what future fights do you foresee to prevent privatization of public lands? What can we expect?
Well, unfortunately, Representative Gibbons and Pombo, in a statement this week, when they realized they were defeated, said that they would be back at it again, trying to change the mining law, probably using the mining law as their vehicle, as the spear point in their effort to privatize public lands. We're also seeing an increasingly contracting as a sort of foot in the door for privatization of public lands and in places like national parks, in places like national forests. And, well, of course, we're also seeing these aggressive fee programs, these sort of pay-to-play ideas where if you want to go for a hike on the weekend, you need to pay fees to the federal government to use your own public lands.
Rolf, thank you very much. That was Rolf Skaar of the Siskiyou Project on the victory in Congress this week when changes to mining laws were dropped from the federal budget reconciliation package.
The leftist front-runner for Sunday's election in Bolivia, Evo Morales, is saying his movement is a nightmare for the United States. Morales has vowed to end free market policies and legalize the growing of coca. His main rival, the conservative Jorge Cugara, is promising to create jobs and prosperity. Bolivia has had 5 presidents in 4 years and is a deeply divided nation. Bolivia is currently governed by interim president Eduardo Rodriguez, who took office after Carlos Mesa was ousted amid popular protests. Morales is an Aymara Indian who was hoping to become the country's first indigenous head of state. Polls show he has a slight lead over Cugara. Morales appears unlikely to obtain 50% of the vote necessary to avoid a runoff in January. On Thursday, he told a large crowd of the city of Cochabamba that it was time for those humiliated by history to run the country. Washington had said it expects any future Bolivian government to honor previous commitments to fight the production of illegal drugs.
Yesterday, Cuba will once again host peace talks between the Colombian government and the second largest guerrilla group operating in the country, the National Liberation Army. FSRN's Joseph Mutti has more from Havana.
This is the 4th attempt for both sides to seek common ground in the longest conflict in all of Latin America. The last meeting took place here in Havana 3 years ago, but ended in failure when the Colombian government suddenly pulled out of the talks. Public pressure in Colombia has forced President Álvaro Uribe to negotiate with both the left-wing ELN guerrillas and the right-wing paramilitary groups, which are considered to be some of the most brutal in the hemisphere. Over the weekend, the government signed an agreement with a sector of the paramilitary United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia to lay down its arms on condition it be granted 2 seats in parliament and full amnesty for its crimes. Many analysts are pessimistic about these new talks, saying Uribe is only seeking to gain points from war-weary voters for his re-election in May. In Havana, for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Joseph Mutti.
Iraqi police captured and mistakenly released militant leader Abu Masad al-Zarqawi last year. The Iraqi Deputy Interior Minister said that Zarqawi was arrested in the central Iraqi town of Fallujah, but was released when nobody recognized him. Zarqawi's group, Al-Qaeda, in Iraq, has claimed responsibility for many of the biggest attacks of the insurgency. The U.S. military claimed to have injured Zarqawi in an assault in 2005. A statement released by Al-Qaeda appeared to confirm this, but said that the injuries were minor. The Iraqi Interior Minister insisted Zarqawi would eventually be captured. Zarqawi is the most wanted suspect in Iraq and has a U.S. bounty of $25 million on his head. This from the BBC.
According to Reuters, a straw poll conducted after voting closed in Iraq's election yesterday showed the dominant Shiite Islamist bloc retained a strong following, but it was being challenged by former Prime Minister Iyad Alawi's secular slate. More than 500 interviews with voters by Reuters reporters across Iraq indicated strong support in Shiite areas for the United Iraqi Alliance, the senior partner in a ruling coalition with the Kurds. The UIA says it has won 57% of the national vote for Iraqi's first full-term parliament since Saddam Hussein fell. But Alawi appeared to have made up ground from his 14% showing in January's poll for an interim assembly. The Reuters poll suggests Alawi could be a force in mixed areas like the capital Baghdad. Alawi has a strong following among secular Sunnis and Shiites in Baghdad. A high voter turnout was reported in the mainly Sunni Arab western province of Anbar. The poll suggested the Anbar vote was split between the Islamist Sunni Iraq Accordance Front and followed closely by Salah al-Mutlaq's secular Iraqi Front for National Dialogue, which also has strong Baathist links.
Canada's Prime Minister, Paul Martin, has warned the U.S. that he will, quote, not be dictated to. Martin is saying Canadians expect him to stand up for their country. Martin has responded to comments made by U.S. Ambassador David Wilkins. On Tuesday, the diplomat urged Canadian politicians to watch what they said about the U.S. while campaigning for January's general election. After his minority government was ousted in a no-confidence vote, Martin is fighting for re-election. Relations between the two neighboring countries suffered after Canada refused to support the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in 2003. Last year, Martin lambasted Washington over his decision not to join the global effort to combat climate change. Although American Ambassador Wilkins did not mention Martin by name, he suggested he was irked by his criticism of the U.S. at climate change conference in Montreal last week. But the Canadian PM said he was not trying to score political points by slamming the U.S., but had every right to speak out in favor of his country's interests. Canadians will go to the polls to elect a new parliament on 23 January after Mr. Martin lost a no-confidence vote. The minority Liberal government had been in power only 17 months.
This year has been the warmest on record in the Northern Hemisphere, say scientists in Britain. It's the second warmest globally since the 1860s, when reliable records began to be kept. Ocean temperatures recorded in the Northern Hemisphere, Atlantic Ocean, have also been the warmest on record. The researchers from the UK Met Office and a University of East Anglia say this is more evidence for the reality of human-induced global warming. The Northern Hemisphere is warming faster than the South because a greater proportion of it is land, which responds faster to atmospheric conditions than ocean. Northern Hemisphere temperatures are now about 0.4 degrees Celsius higher than a decade ago. No measurements of average temperature can be completely accurate, though. According to the BBC, 8 of the 10 warmest years since 1860 have occurred within the last decade.
An explosion at a Russian nuclear power plant complex killed one worker and badly hurt two others, but Russia's nuclear agency said no reactors were affected. Radiation levels remained normal as the reactor in that part of the Leningrad nuclear plant was underground repairs was not in operation. But Thursday's blast threw a spotlight on what environmentalists called uncontrolled operations at Russian nuclear sites. The blast happened in a smelter at the plant in the closed nuclear town of Saznovy Bor, 50 miles west of the northern city of St. Petersburg. The smelter is operated by a company reprocessing scrap metal. A 33-year-old worker died of his injuries this morning, and two others were injured. The group Rosengoatom, upon questioning, defended itself by saying, quote, there were no violations of safety levels and operating conditions of the energy units of the Leningrad nuclear plant.
Moscow is saying a toxic river spill from a chemical explosion in China has reached Russian waters. This according to the BBC. Russian Emergencies Minister Sergei Shoigu said checks carried out in the Amur River so far show toxicity levels to be normal. But Shoigu said the water polluted with benzene today reached the Russian border and has flowed into the Amur River. Chinese media reported that the spill is significantly diluted in the Songhua River before entering the Amur. The leak has been flowing down the Songhua River in China following the blast at a petrochemical plant in November. Beijing has apologized to Russia for the pollution entering its rivers. U.S. retail giant Walmart has embarked on a global expansion and acquisition spree with a Japanese takeover and a doubling of its presence in Brazil. Shareholders in Japan's fifth biggest retail group, Seiyu, have approved a $1 billion rescue deal from Walmart. Under the agreement, Walmart will raise its stakes in Seiyu, which in turn will become a Walmart subsidiary. Walmart also doubled its outlets in Brazil by buying 140 stores from Portugal Sonae for $757 million. The deal means Walmart now has 295 shops in Brazil, making it the country's third largest retail chain. Meanwhile, Walmart's takeover of Seiyu will give it a foothold in the difficult Japanese market. This from the BBC. And this has been the KBOO Morning News for Friday, December 16th, 2005. Portland area weather, today partly sunny in the morning, then mostly sunny, highs 35 to 40, tonight mostly clear in the evening, then partly cloudy, patchy freezing fog, lows 25 to 30, Saturday and Sunday partly sunny in the morning, then mostly sunny, highs around 40, lows 30 to 35. Thanks for joining us this morning. This morning's newscast was edited by Becca Bartelson and Chris Andrea. Our engineer is Becca Bartelson. The KBOO News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Jim Thompson.
Coming up this morning on your community radio station at 7:30, it's Arnie and Melody hosting Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Topics include the upcoming solstice and visioning the new year. Also, Motion Lakeman will give us an update on the latest projects of the Village Building Convergence. At 9, it's Marlena's Electronic Salon. Host Marlena Smith will speak with Ed Goldberg about politics and culture. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! Tune in tonight at 5 for the KBOO Evening News with more on protecting public lands from privatization, plus a feature on women in Venezuela's revolutionary movement. And at 5:30, it's Counterspin, the program that monitors the mainstream media. Would you like to help with the morning news? We need your volunteer assistance. We need to get important stories like these out to listeners, and that's where you come in. Please contact us at amnews@kboo.org or call us at 503-231-8032, extension 202. This is KBOO, your community radio station in Portland at 90.7 FM, in Corvallis at 100.7, and in the White Salmon area on K220HR at 91.9 FM. Have a great weekend.
This is the KBOO Community Calendar for Friday, December 16th. The Community Music Center is having a benefit violin concert on Friday, December 16th at 7:30 p.m. Community Music Center performing faculty Anthony Dyer and Cynthia Scott with Linda Barker will present a concert of sprightly music for violin, viola, and piano. The event is a fundraiser for the Community Music Center, benefiting scholarships for the music students and other programs. Tickets available at the door only. Suggested donation is $10, but no one will be turned down. For more info, please call the Community Center at 503-823-3177. The Vancouver Critical Mass is holding a bicycle ride through Vancouver. Everyone is welcome. This ride will start at 5:30 p.m. at Esther Short Park. Please come if you have a bicycle and like to ride. The Multnomah Arts Center presents a night of marimba jazz with the Rick McNutt Quartet. This is a benefit concert for the Multnomah Arts Center's acquisition of a new marimba for the music program. The auditorium is located at 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway. For more info, call 503-823-2787. And there is a suggested donation for the event, and the proceeds will benefit the Multnomah Arts Center. Thanks for listening to the KBOO Community Calendar for Friday, December 16th. You are listening to KBOO in Portland, Hood River, and Willamette Valley.
I'm using as a subject from which to preach why I am opposed